This is Dr. Allie Evans welcoming you to Light on Health. And it is light out today. It's a good day to shine some light. This is a show where we shine the light on a full spectrum of topics that affect your health and that of our entire community. My guest today is Caitlin Stecker. She is a local licensed clinical social worker, as well as a certified psychodramatist. She is a therapist that's certified and specializes in IFS, which is internal family systems. And we're going to talk a lot about what that means. She's also a national trainer for IFS, which is the type of therapy she specializes in. So, Caitlin, welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you. You know, I wanted to just take a moment and recognize that I haven't been on the radio on the show since Ann passed.
Yes.
And I want to thank you for taking this spot in her honor and just to recognize all that she's given to our community.
Yes. I know I get doing this show, and when I walk in the room, I always think about her.
Yeah.
And I forget to acknowledge kind of out loud and on the radio. Her presence is just always here. And I often feel like she's sitting, even though Joanne's behind the dials, feel like she's sitting behind the dials.
Yep.
She was a little bit more of a Wonder Woman because she could work dials and interview at the same
time.
I know my limit.
Yes, no kidding.
Those dials are a little overwhelming.
Yep. Well, we're all indebted to her, and I want to make sure, you know, she's remembered as all of us. I think there is that deep hope that we will be remembered, you know, when we pass as well.
Yeah. That remembrance that you leave your mark, you know, she created, and she had so much to do with the radio station and created this show. And even though she's not here in physical form to continue it, it will go on.
Yes.
You know?
Well, you've done a beautiful, beautiful job of carrying that tradition and expanding on it as, you know, a mentee should, as they say.
So, speaking of grief and other emotions,
As I wipe my nose,
Let's talk a little bit about your journey and how you got into the work you do.
Well, good morning, Mom. she's probably listening.
Yeah.
I think all of us, and actually Kubler-Ross and also Carolyn Mace talk about as children that often the roles that we play in our families, some of us go on to market that on the greater community fair and turn it into some kind of a profession.
Yes.
And certainly there are those of us, there's a book, Drama, The Gifted Child, that was kind of the key of the inner child movement beginning, which was talking about when children are actually showing some capacity to listen to their parents and provide some of that kind of support or relief, that we really get trained to seeing ourselves in that role. And though I don't think I was, you know, sitting down having counsel with my family, I had seven adults that I was interacting with all the time. And I learned about a variety of interesting people. And there is a way in which that has continued to drive my experience in my life, is that people are fascinating to me, and I feel a calling to being there with and for them. And so it's taken lots of forms. I was going to be a missionary when I was in high school, going to go to New Guinea and all. Thought better of that after a while in my later adolescence, and then went on to just exploring a lot of different kind of work. Worked in the projects in Chicago, and then came to Oregon, Perry Center for Children, and worked in residential treatment, and realized that I really wanted to be able to be a therapist, that I was working in the everyday environment, but there was something about that concentrated work that really intrigued me. So I went back to grad school and have been searching and exploring all the different ways that we can heal, and now have found a home for myself, and it feels like for my clients and my friends, in internal family systems. It's quite a work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know the name sounds, it's a funny name.
It is.
Like
it is.
You just kind of want to think it's some family dynamic or.
Yep. Yep.
Tell us, I know how powerful this therapy is, and tell us a little bit just what it means, what it is, kind of the third grade version
of
is internal family systems.
I just heard our founder give that version and learned a lot myself, actually. But yes, we all wish that the word family wasn't in there because it is confusing, because it doesn't have anything really to do. Well, you know, it does have something to do with family in the sense of an inner family.
Right.
And that the founder 30 years ago, when he was discovering kind of this way of working, was a family therapist. And his gift is not so much to the idea, which is very essential, of multiplicity, which, of course, I mean, has been known. The Hindus knew it 10,000 years ago. And every other kind of way of working that acknowledges that we're not of just one mind, that we have different responses, different feelings, different thoughts. And this idea then, with his work with families, allowed him to actually start working with the internal parts of people in the way that he would have worked with them if they were external family members. And that's the brilliance that he brought and has really been able now to create a work that is, we just are... We're really getting quite recognized all over the world, and we have training programs on almost every continent now and in the United States, and it is recognized by many of the neuroscience and trauma researchers as they believe the most powerful and effective treatment for healing, especially of any kind of trauma experience, which includes the small T traumas. We talk about big T traumas, which we, of course, can recognize, the war experiences and the various intense childhood abuses. But there's also small T traumas, which are for the person themselves, an experience of being overwhelmed beyond their capacity for functioning or coping in the moment, so that something has to happen to get them through. And at that time, we believe parts are developed, when we don't believe, we know, that these protectors step in to take over, because there is a way in which that overwhelm is being experienced but can't be continuing, and the person feel they can survive. So that gets exiled and pushed into the nervous system, and a protector steps in to take over at that moment. So that might be, if it's a little three-year-old child experiencing something, it might be the sense and kind of choice to say, I'm going to be good. I'm going to do the best thing every time in order for this not to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to be smarter about knowing when something might happen to me, and I'm going to watch and be aware.
And be hypervigilant.
Exactly. And, yeah. So these, what we call protectors, but certainly in the, you know, regular cultures called defenses, responses, reactions, develop. And if they take, if they're part of our natural temperament and they begin to be a pattern, then they will grow into what we often refer to in our adult life as our personality. Our way of being. It's what often people would describe about us. So that person is such a giver, or that person is always trying to find out how to do something the best. And so one of the other work that we didn't talk about is that I've just in the last few years become very enamored with is the Enneagram, which is both a psychological and a spiritual typology, kind of actually describes the kind of protectors that we'll develop. And it is helpful because those protectors and those strategies are not our essence. And there's where the rub is. Because especially in our culture that is very what we call manager-driven, a kind of protector that tries to anticipate and preemptively take care of us so that we don't get hurt in the ways we've been hurt before. So it helps us do things like show up for work, show up for the radio show. And there's that element of keeping us functioning, keeping us capable.
And it sounds like really all of this is us, it's a way of us learning to survive in the world. It's a survival mechanism, and it has the best intention
absolutely
to keep us safe, both physically and emotionally.
Absolutely.
And what comes to mind is like when you were talking about when these parts can take over and become what looks like our personality, what came into my mind is like this, you know, extremely busy CEO in New York City who's like, you know, task managing and just, you know, barking orders and can't move fast enough. And to think, you know, is this really who this person is deep in center, or is this kind of this part that this person has learned to, or this part that's taken over to help this person survive?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, of course, when you describe it that way, and you feel the drivenness, what we say is, if you want to know if you're in a part, feel if you have an agenda. If there's a way something's supposed to turn out, or you're disappointed because it hasn't turned out in a certain way, that element of having a part of us that believes it knows how it's supposed to go, often, again, because it's tied to the feeling that we'll be safe, we won't get hurt again, we'll be able to survive, as you say, that is there in a way that when we're in, now I want to introduce the idea of self, when we're in center or in our essence, then we can be in the moment fully without agenda and present to what is we're experiencing, what's occurring, and we're able to respond in a spontaneous, creative way that actually fits. And so all of those elements are when we're actually able to make a choice outside of our strategies or outside of our parts hijacking us, we call it. Mm-hmm. They literally at times, and people can, I think, relate to this, feeling like somebody's come in and knocked us out of the driver's seat and is now running the show, and we're kind of in the vehicle going, you know, what's happening? Or later can say, oh my God, what happened? I didn't really mean to say that. I wish I hadn't reacted that way.
And I think when I first started learning about parts, I had toddlers at the time, and I would think about when one of my kids would get, it's like they're, you know, they flip their lid. They would go from, like, you know, they're playing and they're getting frustrated. And then maybe I say, no, you can't take that toy home. And then they just become this, it's like they, you know, when you say you're beside yourself, absolutely. You're like, who is this child in front of me?
Yes.
And they have this just completely, you know, this breakdown that looks so irrational.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they go through it, and then they flip back, and they're like back to, you know, oh, there's my child again. And you're just sort of witnessing this other personality take over.
Yes, absolutely. That's a beautiful example. And actually, of course, we see it in children. What we don't often see so readily is in adults. And all of us in a day at times can be taken over by a part in that way. Someone says something, it hurts our feelings. We get, we can begin to withdraw, or we can react. We get angry, we stomp off, we push back. So there can be all of these reactions that have an intensity to them that often later we'll go, oh boy. You know, we'll have when we kind of come back to our senses, as they say, we'll say, wow, that isn't me that I really relate to or am familiar with, or the really hard thing is I don't like it. I don't like that part of me.
Right.
And I wish I wasn't like that. And so one of the things that we do in this healing model is we're actually working with the relationship between the parts internally, and also being able to have parts really come to know that there is this core, this self, this essence that is the healing force in the person's system. That when we're in that place, we can handle anything. Mm-hmm. And we can tap into a wisdom that's really beyond us. I mean, I always say it's like, it's greater than. And we feel it and we know it and we can rest in it and we can feel safe in it. When our parts are very active and they feel they have to be working on our behalf because there's still wounded ones inside that are carrying the effects of those experiences of overwhelm or wounding or hurt, then they have to keep being busy on our behalf. And we don't really feel at times we have a choice. And it's why people especially say in what we call a firefighter part, which is a protector, but it does it in a way that is more reactive, impulsive, strong, comes in, you know, pushes something to happen, usually mood altering us, that part is still trying to take care of us, but it can create some collateral damage. It can hurt the body. It can hurt our relationships. And we can wake up the next day and go, oh, I can't believe I did that again. Mm-hmm. I said I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to eat sugar again. I wasn't going to go stay at work so late. I wasn't going to, you know, all of the things that might be our ways of changing how we feel so that we're not in touch with distress.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know when Dick Schwartz, who developed this model, didn't he develop it looking at eating disorders specifically?
Yeah. He was running a research project on bulimia with adolescent girls and their families. And all the things were going on great. But the girls reported still binging and purging. Mm-hmm. And so, as he said, he did the outrageous thing was to ask them about it. And
Imagine that.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Going to the actual wise person experiencing it. And they were able to share with him. And there were a couple of them that were incredibly articulate about, I say I'm not going to do it. And then my friend called and she was nasty with me. And then I got off the phone and then I started thinking about what I could eat. And then I started, you know, fighting with myself about it. And then all of a sudden I woke up and I was at the kitchen table with all of this stuff and I felt sick and I couldn't believe I did it again.
And I think that I know when I learned that idea is so, it just, I think, opens up this place of forgiveness for these behaviors that we do that, like you said, they're not coming from center. They're a part that's trying to help us.
Yep.
And in the decisions they make, you know, there can be a lot of shame or a lot of judgment. But it opens up that space to really see that part as this is just one of my children, so to speak.
Yes. Yes.
And it's not me.
Right.
It's just it's a strategy that my body in its best interest has developed to try to protect.
Yep. Absolutely. And I think that, again, that's the goal of the healing work is bringing compassion to our whole system.
Yes.
And it is not it's not like we have to do affirmations, which, I mean, I think can be helpful. But honestly, often that's one part trying to talk other parts into feeling better or differently. And we can get into, again, what we call polarization, and it can actually strengthen the opposition. Mm-hmm. The more we try to make ourselves feel or think something that we think or feel already differently, then we're going to be in a struggle and we're going to end up spending a lot of energy in that struggle.
Yeah.
And the compassion that comes, but it's a tricky thing because it is a genuine compassion that comes that when we're in self, when we're able to be in this, what we call the 8 C's, and I write them down,
because it just makes you feel calm to hear them.
Exactly. Yeah. It's wonderful. I know. Just reading them is like, okay. So we have these 8 C's. These are the qualities of self, and it's calm, compassionate, clear, courageous, connected, curious, creative, and confident. And so when we're in those qualities, we have access then to self, which is able to see all of our parts with loving eyes and to really be able to appreciate that every one of our parts is coming from a place of their own love and compassion and wish for care, especially of what we now introduce the idea of exiles, these parts that were, when they were being experienced as being overwhelmed, were tucked away in the nervous system. And it comes from the fight, flight, freeze. Mm-hmm. And it's often the freeze experience, the overwhelm that's shut down our capacity to respond. And so it gets literally stored away, tucked away in the nervous system. It doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. And that's why often we say if our protectors are doing their jobs, we don't even know who they're protecting. Mm-hmm. Because they're so busy on the outside, you know, making us function in the world and doing what we have to do, or mood altering us in a variety of ways or whatever to distract or take us out of our bodies. But they know there are these exiles inside of our body that are carrying the wounded experience and also carrying beliefs about ourselves that came from those experiences of overwhelm, like, I'm not really lovable. I'm not worth anything. Life's never going to be better. I'll always be a victim. These kind of beliefs that come, that children have, because to think anything else would mean that they were totally powerless. Mm-hmm. And when we're, any of us, the thing that we don't want to feel or know or experience the most is powerlessness.
Yeah.
And then what's incredible as Bill W. in the 30s created a whole program on people being able to get the support to recognize and actually know their powerlessness. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh, God, I mean, it just is so amazing. I mean, you know, and the consciousness of the culture wasn't that at all. But, you know, now millions and millions and millions of people have been helped because that powerlessness is the truth. And there is so much of our life that we can't influence or change. But our strategies and our protectors say, we've got to do something about it because otherwise we're going to die.
Right. And I know you've done a lot of work with Francis Weller.
Yes.
His work is focused a lot on grief.
Yes.
And when you talk about exiles, I just think so much about what I see in my practice, which is so much undigested grief.
Yes.
Mostly because it's just such a threatening emotion that people really don't, in our culture, we don't kind of give tools for how to deal with it. You know, there might be sort of a week of, okay, you're well supported and it's really normal to try and grieve. But beyond that, it's just I think it's a really scary place. So it seems like that would be a great thing to just tuck away into the recesses of the nervous system.
And absolutely.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
Although it's not.
Yeah. I can remember, it's probably 20 years ago now when a guy came to see me and he'd never been in therapy, never thought about it, but he was having all of these incredible physical symptoms. And yet, he also was emotionally feeling just shut down, overwhelmed, whatever. It took us three sessions. And I'll always remember the moment when he realized that it was the 10-year anniversary of the death of his brother that he had witnessed, and that he realized he had never thought about it again after, like you say, about the first week. But his body remembered, and it was showing all the kind of symptoms of how it was, as he realized it would have been for him if he had, in a sense, stayed with that memory and that experience, but it had been shut down in him. And I mean, of course, I mean, my body remembers being with him because as he, you know, was able to connect with that and really let himself grieve with my support and continue to be in relationship to his brother, then his life just totally changed and opened up, and it was greater and more than he'd ever experienced because of the grief that he was able to connect with. And that's what Francis Weller, who, if anybody wants to check, he's got a website called Wisdom Bridge. And, you know, he is saying at this point that we have lost something that's essential. And what's really cool is the neuroscience people are showing that we're hardwired to create and experience our grief together in community and ritual. we were not ever intended to grieve alone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even work for our brains and for our bodies. And so, you know, we have what are our, like, funerals, but, you know, often people come and talk to me about how they were looked at with disparaging judgment when they started crying at a funeral.
Yeah.
And this is one of the really, I think, wounding aspects of our society now, is that it puts us in a relationship with our feelings and with the exact direct experience of our life that says we shouldn't go there and we shouldn't have intense experience of feeling and especially of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And then we should do that privately and not upset people. Well, we all need to be upset.
Yeah.
We all need to be woken up to the reality of our experience. Because if we're not, as Carl Jung said, what we don't bring to consciousness comes to us as fate.
Mm.
And this is what I see in people in their lives and in their bodies, is that what we don't process and really consciously connect, our body will start enacting it.
Mm-hmm.
And we say parts will use the body to tell their story.
Sure.
So people, we talk, you know, a lot of people are aware of the whole thing about a pain in the neck. You know, we got somebody will say that person's a pain in the neck, and then the person's going to the chiropractor a lot.
Yeah.
But there are all kinds of ways, and
or
I know you
that are
see it.
Off and
yes.
They have chronic urinary
UTIs.
Infections.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. It's wild because on a conscious level, you not even maybe know those kind of associations.
Absolutely.
But the body knows them. And symbolically and metaphorically, these things get expressed. And they get expressed in our life. And then we feel victimized by it because it feels like it's happening to us.
Right.
When in fact, it's parts of us trying to say, see me, know me, connect with me,
yeah.
love me, help me.
And before we run out of time,
yeah.
tell us, so for the people listening who just hear this and probably, you know, I feel like all the listeners are going to start to be able to look a little bit internally at their internal family.
Right, yeah.
And start to kind of pay attention.
Yeah, maybe be curious a little bit.
Yeah, what resources, like, is there a book that comes to mind? Is there a... What would you recommend as a starting point for people who are listening and saying this makes a lot of sense and how do I take one step forward?
Yeah. Well, number one, I would go to centerforselfleadership.org. So centerforselfleadership.org. And there are some videos and there's also a article, The Larger Self, that actually talks about all of this and how the model was developed and is very, very helpful if you want to get, you know, again, more of a sense of what all of this parts kind of stuff is about. And again, there's videos. Also, you and I talked about that we'll have my numbers at the desk here at the station. So if somebody wants to call. And though I'm not taking new clients at the moment, I will help people try to find some resources if that's something that they're interested in. One of the things that I'm going to do is I am going to create some grief rituals for this community. And it'll probably be like every other month for a process where we will actually come together and ripen our grief and create a safe experience so that we can share that with one another.
And that's no matter how long ago, no matter
absolutely.
Any grief anyone holds of any.
Yep. Absolutely.
Even little mini grief.
The grief of the dream that didn't happen because we wanted to be able to be,
a famous actress.
Yes, right. a great singer.
Yes.
And somehow, life gave us
a different
track. And so, you know, all of those, that the grief of a relationship in divorce, so much of the pain is being able to grieve the dream that didn't get to be lived out. And yet often because there's so much other grief and pain that's being processed that you don't get to really say, oh my God, you know, that was something that I really hoped for.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, if for anyone who wants, there's the Center for Self Leadership
.org, yep.
And you can also call our station, Coast Community Radio, at 503-325-1000. That's the
0010.
0010. I almost gave the hospital phone number 0010. They would, and they have Caitlin Stecker's contact info, which she has graciously offered to connect people to some resources.
Just consult with folks
if need be. So that was a whirlwind, and I thank you so much. And I'm sad to have to stop talking about this.
Well, thank you so much for making time and space.
And lots more info out there for all of you. So thank you to Caitlin Stecker, and talking about our internal family systems model and our emotional health. You've been listening to Coast Community Radio. A very special thank you to Joanne Rideout for generously engineering our show. It is my hope that we have enlightened and empowered you to take one tiny step forward towards your own radiant health. Have a great day.
Blessed be.